and tell everybody you're pregnant?
No.
I will.
Hi, Ann.
Hello.
Hang on, I just had a thing with Scott from the first week.
I remember something like
yeah.
that. How is Ann?
Okay.
Are you home?
No, I am at the office right now.
I am too. Doesn't it just suck?
Pretty much, yeah. Can't think of a single good thing about it. Especially considering we're having one of those absolutely beautiful days that we only get about six of in a year right now.
When you want to be outside, yes.
I would at least like to have a window.
Yeah.
No, I'm in an inner office that goes around the core of the building that used to be a 10 by 10 closet.
Oh, gosh. Who we got from Geo? Hello? I heard somebody from Geo call in.
Tom and Susie and Dan are here.
I'm sorry, Susie who?
Tom,
yep.
Dan.
Dan.
Kind of like Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Hey, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Hi, this is Chris. Sorry, I'll be on I'll be on for an hour.
Okay.
Today, so thanks.
Hey, we will too. We can only stay an hour. See you.
Okay,
oh.
Hello, Boris.
Hey. Sorry I'm late.
Not a problem. Susie, is there a conflicting meeting that we're running up against that's like a mission-related meeting or something?
Well, it's only here at WASU where Ray is giving a talk about the rovers that we all want to go.
Okay, so this isn't something in general that I need to be worried about. Okay. Todd?
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, I guess I need to start doing the nose appointment here. Okay, so we're missing rings, radio science, atmospheres.
I'm here.
I'm sorry, who? Is that Lyle?
Yeah.
I missed you calling in. Sorry. Okay, great. Okay, so it's just rings and radio sciences we're missing. Okay, well, I have no reason not to expect it, but why don't we go ahead and get going on this anyway. I guess the first topic on the agenda is the DVD case SBR. There was a question raised by Todd as to whether or not this had already been approved. I think part of the confusion is due to two of the email messages that are included in the directory that I included in the email log on this issue. After having gone back and read those, I now suspect that those emails relate to a separate issue, which was the data set mission relationship in the object catalogs, and I need to remove those. I wanted to leave them up just for now so people could check them out and see whether or not they agree with me, but as far as I can tell, those are related to a completely different issue. I have no memory of this ever having reached the Management Council, nor has anyone that I've talked to. Does this conflict with what you remember on this issue?
Oh, I didn't think it ever passed through the SCR process.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was approved at all.
Yeah, my memory is we were still hashing out drafts of the SCR. And I seem to remember Joe Zender in particular was not happy with the SCR in its last format. But other than that, like I say, does anybody else remember this having gotten to the MC level?
Well, since... I don't know. I guess I won't start speaking.
No, I don't think it got to the MC level.
Okay. Yeah, the last status certainly that I show is just in progress, which means we're still haggling over a draft. Okay. Did everybody have a chance to actually read? Hello, Dick.
Good morning.
Excuse me. Did everyone have a chance to read the most recent version, which I believe is the February of 2005 version of this?
I did, I guess the background information is a little misleading compared to what the recommendation is later in the SCR. So.
Okay, go ahead and why don't you tell, yeah, go ahead and...
Well, in the background, there's sort of like they give two reasons, and number two, is, or not two reasons, but kind of the background information. The point two was convert all directory and file names to lowercase before writing the DVD was part of the recommendation, but in the background, but in the text, it simply says choose lowercase or uppercase and stick with that for that particular volume, you know, media or whatever, that volume. So it, they don't reconcile in terms of what the recommendations are and what the background says should be. Now, my reaction was mostly to that statement that when you put things on DVD, you got to convert it all to lowercase. And that just doesn't work for us because sometimes we consolidate DVDs into CDs and we don't want to convert the case for the file name because then we have to basically redo everything, index files, pointers, so forth.
Okay, now my understanding is if you choose lowercase, and that's what you use on your DVD, if you use the UDF bridge, then the ISO partition on that disk will still show up as uppercase.
That's correct.
Sure, that is correct because ISO is standardized to uppercase.
Okay, so...
I mean, that's the standard.
We may need to work on the wording, but I believe the suggestion to either choose upper or lower is still legitimate in the sense that if you choose upper, then you will be archiving both partitions in uppercase. If you choose lower, you'll be doing the DVD, or excuse me, the UDF partition in lowercase and the ISO partition in uppercase. So it sounds like we need a clarification on the wording, but basically the principle is still the same. Would you agree with that, Todd?
Well, I still hold the position that it's case insensitive, and it doesn't matter if you mix case if you wanted to, in terms of the UDF partition.
Actually, the UDF partition, if this is what you're referring to, Todd, preserves case.
Right, right. It does.
So it is case sensitive is what you're saying, right?
Well, it is, but I thought the last time we had this discussion, we simply, well, one of the positions was, while case is preserved, when you normalize to either upper or lower, you cannot have a conflict in file names. Okay, so you can't have a file name in all lowercase and one in uppercase. In UDF, that's allowed to be two separate files, but in the ISO partition, it's not. So therefore, we would have to impose to, say, the ISO format that there's no name conflict.
Okay, that matches my memory as well. We had agreed that you could not have two files that have the same name except for case distinction.
Right, and that would be the only restriction in terms of choosing file names.
Okay, now this is starting to remind me of where we had problems. Okay.
Yeah.
Todd, could you remind us of the part of the SCR that talks about what you said about upper or lower case?
Oh, if you actually go down lower into the into it, it says changes to the standards reference specifics, the section almost at the bottom of the document.
Okay.
It says, let me see if I can find it again. The change to section 5.3.3.2.
File names may be in either upper or lowercase.
Right. It says, you know, file names must be in uppercase, should be changed to file names may be in either upper or lower. Example should be changed, and then there was somewhere else that said...
D2 basically says upper or lowercase characters may be used, but no mixed case, and case should be consistent across the data set archive. That's probably the most specific one that far.
Right. So maybe, you know, maybe I'm reading more into this than is intended, but I sort of... I thought I read somewhere else, too, that you could choose upper or lower, but you had to be consistent.
Yes, I think that's...
It's
that's
somewhere else. I can't find it right
yeah.
now. And then if you choose lower, you can never put it on a CD, but I'm not sure that really holds because the ISO partition is a CD-compliant partition. So.
But it will show up in uppercase. I think the issue is if you want... If you literally want to create a physical CD, then the ISO 9660 standard holds, which requires uppercase. So Yeah, I think basically the data provider was limited to some extent by the physical media they chose to use.
Right, but I guess that's kind of where I have a little trouble too. I mean, if we're always putting an ISO 9660 format of the file system on, so we have the bridge between the two, it means in some instances we're supporting the uppercase version of the file names anyway. So I'm not sure that really restricts you from ever going to a CD format, even if you chose lowercase names.
I'm not sure I entirely understand you. What you mean basically is if you then wanted to go from the DVD to the CD, you could simply copy the ISO partition. Is that the issue?
Well, yeah, it would have the ISO naming.
Okay. I agree with you.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I think the problem is if the missions decide in advance that they always want their file names to show up as lowercase, then they had better not choose to archive on physical CD media. They have to archive on DVD in order to have the possibility of the lowercase file names.
Well, that's true.
Okay. I think that was all of this was trying to state. I don't think that's any conflict with what you've been saying.
And then in doing so, in recognizing any partition on a DVD, any ISO partition, of course, will have uppercase names.
Correct.
Right, and this is where the case insensitivity, I think Anne in her email stated kind of where we were last year more accurately than I did, but in that it was really case insensitivity is what we were trying to achieve in terms of the interpretation of file names, whether they're in pointers or index files or what have you. So that it would work regardless of the partition that you used and regardless of the media that you're using.
I would agree with that, yes.
Whether it's CD, DVD, disk, whatever.
Okay. All right. Does anyone else have any comments? I think so far I'm not hearing a lot of issues with the SCR other than clarifying some wording.
So Elizabeth, related to that clarification, when Todd brought up the background part where it does say some of the early recommendations by Mike was by Mike Martin was to convert, like it says here in the background, convert to lowercase. Is that strictly a background comment, or does it need to be clarified that we're not requesting that anymore? Or
which paragraph is that?
Well, but that's the background recommendation from the DDL. It doesn't necessarily translate into the SCR.
Yeah, I understand, and that's my question. Do we need to make it clear that it does not?
Well, yeah. Actually, I found the section, too, that said that you could choose either case, and I think this might help with your question, and that is, in the part that says changes to standards reference overview, the very first one basically gives the overview about choosing a case. It says all file and directory names within the same data set archive must have the same case. But it's not clear to me that that's completely reflected in the specific changes to the standards.
Okay, because it doesn't make clear that when you archive on DVD, you're going to be ending up with two different cases because of the way the UDF bridge works if you choose the lowercase. Is that the issue, Todd?
Well, no. I guess it's more that when I read the specific changes to the standards reference that is in the following section, it's not clear that you can choose the case you want, even if you're on a DVD.
Okay, so the specific changes to the standards reference need to make it clear that you may choose either upper or lower.
Yeah.
But you need to be consistent across the archive. Okay.
Right. Now, I still hold the point of view that it should all be case insensitive, and it doesn't matter even if you mix case, but I'm just putting that caveat in.
Okay, that's fine. If I remember correctly, the main disagreement with that had been the way various platforms read the file name, and we had debated about whether or not we should care about that fact, but was it Windows that insisted on reading?
Well, it's Anne said it right. It's the display case. How they choose to display it. And, you know, even a CD, when you put it in a Windows system, changes it to proper case in the display. It doesn't display it as all uppercase.
But it does not allow for two duplicate names even with case changes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody disagrees with the no duplicate names issue. I think what I'm hearing from Todd, though, is that you would like the possibility of having mixed case. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think if we're going to, you know, move away from just uppercase only, we should kind of allow people to name things in ways that they would name ordinarily in their file system. And mixed case is pretty commonly used since it's permissible almost in all current operating systems or file systems.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
Todd, can I clarify that? When you say mixed case, I think it's been used in two ways so far. Are you saying that a single file name could have mixed case in it, or what's also called camel case?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that was going to be one of my issues. I'm not sure that would work, and here's my issue. Let's say you did do a mixed case file name on a disk somewhere, but the system doesn't have, it only knows the name either uppercase or lowercase. It seems like there'd be a problem in trying to actually open that file directly.
Well, no. I mean, Windows is probably the most problematic in this, in that it displays it differently than the actual file name on the media.
But what about
in Windows, if you give it the all uppercase version or the one that actually matches it, it works properly.
Actually, I'm thinking the problem is the opposite. It's on a Unix system that you're asking, you're opening, trying to open a file, and mixed case is it's mixed case sensitive. And if you don't know the mixed case file name, you're either going to have to open it uppercase or try to open it lowercase. And if you don't find it in either one of those,
then you're
going to have to iterate through the directory.
Right, but we're assuming, I'm assuming that the pointers reflect the true case, and references to the file actually represent the true case of the file.
I think the issue would be more, for example, if you have a validation program which is trying to determine that you have certain specific files on the CD. On the DVD in this case, you then have to iterate through a number of different combinations in order to figure out whether or not that file is there, rather than simply checking for two combinations with the upper and the lower case.
In fact, I'm arguing you can't go through the iterations. You're simply
right.
Going to have
it would be
the directory dump for uppercase and lowercase and search the files. Otherwise, you're doing a worst case search.
Well, there are ways around that in a technical sense in terms of...
I've been asking that question. Nobody can give me that answer.
Oh, well...
I asked if there was a way that Unix file systems could open up a file based upon a file name irregardless of its case, and no one's told me that they're capable of doing that.
It is, actually. I mean, I've done it before, and what you do basically is you, within the Linux file system or system calls, you say, give me a listing of the files in this in the directory, you convert everything to uppercase, compare it to your uppercase version, and you maintain the mapping of just like it were a UDF ISO bridge.
Well, this,
you say this uppercase version maps to this camel case version.
Yeah, you're agreeing with my solution also, but what I'm saying is that there is no way to simply do a simple open request for a file and make sure you're going to get that file.
Okay, so this sounds like it's something that can be solved. It just requires some extra overhead in terms of searching for and opening the file.
Right.
And I guess the issue we have to ask is that overhead worth it for the sake of being able to use camel notation on file names? I guess what I'd like to do is just go around and get a quick head count on who is interested in pursuing the possibility of mixed case rather than just sticking with either upper or lower as the two options. I guess atmospheres, what would be your preference?
I prefer not to go with mixed case, just either upper or lower.
Okay, who's next? Imaging.
Upper or lower.
Okay, Geo?
We just think you shouldn't count on case one way or another, so it's... Go ahead.
Whatever case you pick may take you under control.
Yeah. So
you're essentially saying you think we should support mixed case?
Not to be unique, no.
Okay, I don't understand your comment, folks.
What are you asking?
Do you believe that our software should support mixed case and therefore our standards should basically allow it?
By support mixed case, do you mean should recognize it as a different file name than something that's not mixed case?
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking if you have, for example, mission.cat spelled with uppercase M, lowercase ISS, uppercase I, lowercase ON.cat, should our software be able to find that file and open it, and should we say that that's a valid file name?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's fine.
Okay, engineering. No mixed case. Okay, what's next? Nafe?
Yeah, I would like mixed case.
Okay, PPI.
I want case insensitivity, so mixed case would be allowed.
Okay, ring?
I'm with Todd on this one. Sorry,
mixed
case.
Okay. Radio science?
I don't want any change at all.
I'll put that as no mixed case.
That's true.
Okay, SBN.
We don't really care. Our experience is that our data preparers won't listen to what we tell them about file names anyway.
So wouldn't case insensitivity be preferable?
That's about the best we can do. But when it comes to mixed case, we have, for example, there's one deep impact person who insists on sending us uppercase directory names and lowercase file names.
So what do you do with those, Ann?
I force the case.
And is that what you will continue to do?
Yeah. We'll just deal with whatever they give us. As long as it's case insensitive, we can manage something.
Okay. So would your vote then be for the standards stating no mixed case, or would you say that we should have tools that support the mixed case?
I think those are two completely different statements.
They are. However, if we're going to force our tools to support mixed case, then I don't see any point in not allowing standards to allow it.
Depending on what you mean by support mixed case, that may be an intractable problem. My contention is that tools should check for three versions of case. Whatever was entered or encountered without modification, and then forced to uppercase if that fails, and forced to lowercase if that fails, and then the file is not found.
So let me interpret that, and you're saying you're not going to support the storage of mixed case file names.
I don't have a hard medium that will support the storage of mixed case file names at this point.
Okay, I don't...
Basically what it comes down to, Steve, is I can't restore mixed file case, so I don't keep mixed file case, even if it's given to me.
Okay, and do you have a preference as to what the standards should state?
My preference is pretty much the same it was at the time, that the standards should not be tied to any particular physical format. Apart from that, whether they say uppercase, lowercase, case insensitive, I really don't care.
Okay. I don't know that I can call that a clear vote in any direction, which means we're tied.
Come on, Ann, vote. One way or the other.
I don't see a clear distinction between the two positions is the problem. I don't see why this has required so much time for me to sit and listen to the discussions because, honest to God, there's only so much you can do about it.
Hey, Elizabeth?
Yes?
Did we miss the part where we talked about case insensitivity versus case sensitivity?
Can I ask who this is? Is this Tom?
Too bad it is.
Yeah.
Both are.
I think my understanding was that we had all agreed that we would not, that we basically required case insensitivity in the sense that you cannot have two file names that are the same except for case.
Okay. It seems like to me that a lot of this goes away if you just say that we're not case sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, I think we're micromanaging things that we can't control.
Yep.
Hello?
In other words, it's workable long as we recognize case insensitivity.
Okay, the biggest problem that I see with all of this is where folks include web pages with links in their archive. Now, I don't know that we any longer have a place to put those, or are they always in the extras directory now? In which case, this is an irrelevant issue. But the only, like I say, the issue would come up there where you have links that may be misrepresented on various operating systems and therefore may or may not work. But within the archive itself,
just because you put things in extras, does that mean it doesn't apply to the other standard, or the standards for archiving don't apply?
That's the whole point of the extras directory.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, in terms of case and all that, these other
everything.
Issues, nothing applies?
That's right.
I don't think the extras directory is even validated.
Hmm. That's an all bets are off
yeah.
corner of the disk.
Correct.
Do we have any standards for web type files?
Yes, we do. We have rather ancient at this point rules on HTML usage for web files, but now that those are all included in the, I guess you can still include them in the documents directory. That would be the one place where it would matter.
What would matter in the documents directory?
You can include HTML or, well, I guess right now our standards are limited to HTML, probably in the future XML, whatever files in the document directory. And the only concern I've got is that when you use references to other file names on the disk in those HTML files, case is going to matter.
It's already a problem.
That's true. It is.
And just saying that we're always going to do it one way or always do it a different way doesn't solve that problem.
Mainly on the Windows platform, is that...
Oh, I mean, it just doesn't solve the problem. You can say, oh, it's Windows' fault, or you can say it's
somebody
else's fault.
No, I understand that, but what I'm trying to understand is the scope of the problem. Is it primarily a Windows issue at this stage in terms of technology?
No.
Well, the Suns have had these problems for years, because everything on a CD comes out as lowercase on a Sun.
Unless you set the driver to display it as uppercase.
Right.
Can you set the drivers to display it as is?
No.
I'm not sure that's a concept that the drivers understand since the driver's supposed to provide the interface.
Right, okay.
There's only one case on the disk, and it'll force it one way or the other for you if you want. It doesn't care, but it's an option.
Okay, so the point then remains that the only problem that this raises in terms of reading the DVDs is a problem that we already have, and it's not going to fix it, or it's not going to change irrespective of what we do.
Well, except we can make it worse by loosening things up.
But I don't think that presents a real technical challenge, though, or a technical stopper.
It's probably something that somebody should sit down and do a little bit of research on so we can at least advise people in the standards reference without necessarily setting standards on it. But
well, technically, for me, the solution is if I'm on a Sun and I see lowercase file names, I know I need to change them to uppercase in order for certain things to work. If I've got mixed case or something even more bizarre, I don't know what the algorithm is to change it into an acceptable format. I think we can impose on the user a requirement to understand what his system drivers do.
Well, the problem is not the user, it's all the readers out there.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry, that's what I meant. Okay, got my words mixed up.
But I think this uppercase converted to lowercase is really only for CD drivers and not DVD drivers.
No, I understand, but I'm talking about the case I'm most familiar with.
Right.
Well, the DVD driver in our DVD jukebox, for example, lets you set a switch for upper or lowercase.
Okay, so the same issue does exist on the DVDs as well as the CDs.
It can, depending on the driver, yeah.
Okay.
Could I ask a question about this Windows problem? I've been testing out some DVDs here, and I can't get this situation where the first character comes out uppercase and all the other ones come out lower. Do other people see that?
That's actually if it's all uppercase to start with.
Well, those are the DVDs that we're making.
And they do that, and,
I mount them, and I've mounted DVDs other people have written, and they all come out uppercase. Now, maybe the guy that set this up found the driver and set that switch, but I don't see the problem that seems to be forcing this whole SCR.
Right, well, say your problem again, Dick.
I don't have a problem.
I
write a DVD with uppercase, and I put it on a Windows system, and I see uppercase file names and directory names.
On Windows. Oh.
On Windows, XP. So if the problem doesn't exist, maybe we don't have to do anything at all.
Well, I think, Dick, this is being driven by more than just an issue of how these things display on Windows machines. I mean, there's the whole human readability issue.
There's a lot of cost involved here. All my software, if I'm ever going to try to validate anybody else's disk, will have to be modified to handle all these
new cases.
Chris, could you address again why the recommendation was that DVDs be written in lowercase?
I don't know if I can do that off the top of my head right now.
What it says here is that for Windows, if it's not lowercase, it comes out different. All the other systems apparently have no problem. To me, this is exactly the same situation as we've had on Suns with CDs. It's just that now Windows users are the ones that are squawking. For me, it's the same solution. You let the Windows people deal with it.
Yeah, but now the Windows people are like JPL management, right?
Yeah, no, that's true.
NASA, HQ.
We fought with Vaxes for years, too.
Yeah. I have to step out of the office for about 2 minutes. I'll be right back, guys.
Let's vote.
Go ahead. I'll deal with whatever you guys decide, honestly.
Unfortunately, sitting in didn't vote either way. It's not going to solve anything.
Dick, I think part of the problem is that it's not so much what the end user sees. It's what the data provider has.
You know, I think you're right, because that's where the discussion and the argument is actually going to come in. It's trying to get the data provider, if necessary, for one reason or another, to change his file name. And that's a hell of an argument. I've had substantial arguments.
Problem. You try to tell your data providers, well, I only accept files in uppercase. None of them are using uppercase on their own systems. Well, very few anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so this leads to some problems converting all their files to uppercase.
So if they put this requirement in when they built their data pipeline, it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, I got to agree with Kyle.
I'm going to try to accomplish that. Go right ahead, Dick.
Yeah, I got to agree with Lyle on this one. I mean, the requirement for uppercase has been there since the beginning of the PDS, and I don't think I ever worked with a single mission that dealt with uppercase file names. They always had to be converted as they came into the PDS.
Well, we did it here. You've got one.
It's been mixed, you know, for us. Some do up front, some don't. And sometimes you're getting the data, you know, not part of an integrated pipeline into PDS, too. So it's going to be whatever their individual choices were.
I just insert a question here. Are the data providers, if they're using not uppercase, are they all lowercase? Or are people actually receiving mixed case file names right now?
Sounds like Ann gets everything.
Yeah, I think back when I was in MIPS, we were at least able to force no mixed case on the pipelines. I don't know today. It's been a while since I've done that. But
I mean, I brought up that issue, and it seems like that's a secondary issue. At least met this discussion off into Never Never Land. But it still seems to me that the difference, issue one is upper and lower case, and resolving that one with those allowed. I think Dick is concerned about even allowing that. The second issue is along mixed case, and I argue that the mixed case, the true mixed case, where you have used camel case file names, even though there's a technical solution, it's an onerous technical solution.
Well, okay, I'm curious. Let me ask this. Let's assume for the moment we go ahead and allow mixed case. Again, no file conflicts. We've ruled that out. But if we allow mixed case, can we try and identify what would be the impacts on our software collectively? And I mean, I can go away and talk to the folks here on the development team, et cetera, and find out what they view the impact in terms of validation tools, et cetera. Would you folks be willing to step back and look at the software that you use at your nodes and find out what the impact would be so that we could come back and bring that, sort of list the impact of pursuing that route and look at that in 2 weeks and then try and make a decision on whether or not allowing mixed case is worth the cost in terms of the necessary software changes? And obviously we need to weigh that against the changes that are going to be required anyways just to allow lowercase.
I think it's a very simple requirement that you're trying to meet in trying to determine this, and that is simply this. Can you do an open statement at any level in any language where that open statement is ensured of returning a valid signal saying either the file exists or the file does not exist, and actually reflect whether that file is on disk? As opposed to, I can't find the file because the name is in a different case.
And I would say in any language you can, but you will have to wrap the low-level system file open calls with some other layer in order to achieve that.
And that layer implies you've got to read every file in the directory and force either uppercase or lowercase.
Yeah, you basically have to emulate what the UDF ISO 9660 breach does.
And you've got to do that for every statement in your program where there's a call to a file name.
Right.
Well, file open or anything that deals with file names.
I guess that I've been pushing back on people who are much more familiar with operating systems than I was, especially operating system I/O. And I kept saying, isn't there a bit you can flip so that the operating system simply forces the uppercase or lowercase? And everybody's telling me that no operating system they know to allow that.
No, it's a big achievement to have mixed case in an operating system. Of course, they wouldn't give you a switch to turn it off, silly person.
Well, I'm talking about searching, actually trying to do an open file, yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that means that we have to, like Todd says, we then have to emulate quite a large amount of code.
No, it's a wrapper around existing code. I mean, you have a PDS open instead of an F open.
It's a big performance hit, I think, is my point, Todd.
Okay, there's a performance hit. The other issue is how many programs do we need to, institute this wrapper in? I don't know how the different nodes work in terms of various pieces of software they have, whether they all use common libraries or not. That's, I think, the impact that we need to evaluate if we do go ahead with the mixed case change. And some nodes it may be completely negligible. Other nodes may have some significant work that they would need to do. So I think that's something that we need to try and evaluate before we can move forward on this.
Right, and I thought Ann's point was good in terms of file open. You simply try the declared file name in whatever case it's in. Then you try upper, then you try lower. And if it fails, it doesn't meet PDS implementation requirement.
But the problem is that's presuming you have a declared file name. There are cases where you would not, where you're coming in blank, basically, and looking for a specific file you expect to be on the CD, but you haven't been fed what that form of the file name is.
Yeah, I can't agree that that's the solution, Todd. If I have a program and I've given it to a user, and he's supposed to be able to read PDS repository somewhere, if they try to open a file, they should be given a message that clearly says whether the file exists or not. Not a message saying, well, I looked for uppercase, I looked for lowercase, didn't find it, so therefore it must not exist. I don't think Ann's solution works, actually.
Well, here's the thing. We have no instance anywhere in any of our software or interfaces where a user would type in a file name that they already knew and try to find that file. That never happened.
I don't think that happens for the users. I would agree with that. However, I believe in the validation process, particularly the volume validation process, that can be quite a common. Actually, another case where I can see it is in something like the, what do we call it, the PDSD layer or whatever, where you're going off and looking for an index file, for example.
I can see if you're accessing files on somebody else's system and you're formulating the URL or the path.
Right.
By some general rule. Internally, all the routines that we run on things either read the file names directly from the directory and don't do it by reading the index file, because it's faster to open the directory and just read the file name. Or they read the file names in one case, and if they don't find it in that case, they force it to the other, because I force all the case on all the files that I get before I write things to the hard media.
Okay. I'm not arguing with that. What I'm trying to say is, okay, let's go through and figure out what the impacts are. I do believe there are some, and we need to evaluate what that's going to cost us in terms of adapting our software.
Okay.
Is everybody willing to do that, take a crack at that over the next 2 weeks?
Hey, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Your scientist gladly reports that we have no impact. We use Windows, which doesn't care what the case is, and even though that costs us, that doesn't cost us anything.
Yeah, SPN has no impact either. We can continue doing things the way we've been doing indefinitely.
I support Elizabeth's suggestion that we're not going to get a resolution today, and if we all look at what the impact is of the nodes, we can talk more carefully in 2 weeks' time.
Okay.
We can sit there and say, if somebody comes in and says, listen, this is a real backbreaker for us, maybe mixed case isn't worth pursuing, but I think we should check and make sure, and I'd like to know whether or not engineering thinks it's going to be a big problem for the tool.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Mitch.
Elizabeth?
Yes.
Sorry, just to make sure we understand about impact, I was talking. Patty and I were talking briefly offline. I'm sort of rethinking my position, but when we're looking at impact, is there a big difference between the impact of? Let's see. There's an impact, I assume, on allowing upper or lower, because you have to check for both.
That's right.
So is allowing the mixed case necessarily adding any impact? In other words, you still have to normalize the. You still have to normalize the case.
That's right, and that's something that I did state, is that we need to evaluate the impact of the mixed case, taking into account that there will already be an impact from having to accept lowercase.
Well, we probably ought to look at that, too. If
okay.
this is an SCR to allow lowercase, we ought to include the impact for lowercase
that's
as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Right now, there's no impact statement.
I agree. Okay. Sounds good. So everybody's got a homework assignment. Two people have already got it done. Next issue had to do with sequences and sets.
Should we all just send that to you, Elizabeth, our impact assessment?
Go ahead, or you can put it on the blog if you wish. I'll probably post that info on the blog as it comes in if you just send it to me.
Okay.
I apologize for not getting blog entries out there for these SCRs when I first put them up, but they are out there now. And the links are available from the web pages on the standards website. Okay, next issue was the, let me see if I got it, sequences and steps. Okay, what did I say was the section of the standards where this, it was 12?
12.5.5 and following.
Thank you.
If you're looking at the PDF file, it starts on page 125 of that file, at least of the version that I have.
There we go. Yes, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first thing that I had mentioned in my email was the need to correct the 2D sequence BNF notation, which is currently incorrect in the standards reference. Has anybody taken a look at that? Does everybody agree, disagree that the new notation is correct, the old notation is incorrect?
I don't understand the old notation. I have to go look for the definition of plus.
Plus means one or more.
So in other words, the current notation omits the comma between successive values but allows the possibility of a null two-dimensional sequence. So yes, there's clearly a syntax error. No, it's not. Yeah, okay. It probably does what you want it to do.
Okay, anybody else got an opinion on that one? Okay, I think that's the correct notation based on some of the other examples.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody does have a protest, please either email me or whatever, just speak up. Okay, now, the second issue came up when Ron was coming up with, what do you call them, test cases for the new vTool.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's got here is a semi-two-dimensional array where three of the elements are multidimensional and three are not.
Mm-hmm.
I could not give him a clear answer based on the standards as to whether or not this was acceptable.
If you, either way, it is clearly syntactically incorrect.
Okay.
And the reason is because even a degenerate sequence, one-dimensional sequence with only one value, must still be enclosed in its own set of parentheses. So the reason that it's invalid is because 99, 88, and 77 do not have enclosing parentheses.
Okay. Ron disagrees. Could you say why?
I need you to speak up. I'm not following with the comment.
Okay. Let's assume for the moment, Ann, we go ahead with your parentheses around the 99, the 88, and the 77.
Mm-hmm.
Do you then think the example is valid?
Syntactically, it is valid. Logically, it makes no sense. But syntactically, it's valid. And the reason is that there's nothing in the definition of the sequences that requires that they be the same length if you have a two-dimensional sequence. I'm not sure how you would state that in BNF anyway.
Good point.
Okay, any other opinions on this?
It just doesn't look right to me. But I guess if you make that change for a sequence 2D in the BNF, then it permits it, I suppose. But currently, the current standard does not permit it.
Okay, Todd, what's your reading on the current standard that says it doesn't permit that?
Well, in terms of the like, if you look at the current sequence 2D, notation for it.
Yes.
It can have one or more sequence 1D, right?
That's correct.
There's no commas between them in the specification.
Yeah, but we disagree.
So how can you actually represent that? It doesn't comply to the specification.
Okay, we just agreed though that the specification is incorrect. That in fact commas should be required.
Right, but then what we're opening up when we do that is whether or not question number two is legitimate, if we want to allow that, because currently it technically isn't allowed.
Okay, but I guess the issue is the standards as they stand right now, in my opinion, are simply wrong. That it's not an issue of whether or not commas should be permitted. I mean, if you look at the 1D sequence, the comma is required. So why should it not be required in the 2D sequence?
Right, but wrong or not, doesn't mean we should really ignore it simply because we don't like it. We change it if we don't like it.
No, it's not an issue of not liking it. It's an issue of the notation being incorrect. But this is what I'm trying to get at. I don't believe that this is simply I don't like the way it's currently listed. I believe this is the notation is incorrectly representing what standards are saying this should be.
Well, then I guess I don't understand the question on number two. It says determine whether the following is a valid sequence. Well, it's only valid if you make the change recommended in item one.
It's not valid if you make the change in item one either. It's still syntactically invalid.
No.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, actually, Ian, I'm going back and looking at it. Where are you getting?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Looking at the definition under item one in the SCR, it says that a 2D sequence is equal to parentheses around one or more 1D sequences. If you now look back at the standards, the definition of a 1D sequence says it is parentheses around one or more scalar values.
That's right.
So in other words, even if you have a degenerate sequence that has only one scalar value, it must have parentheses around it in order to be a sequence.
I see. I agree with you. Okay. Thank you.
Because sequence value is not allowed in a 2D sequence, or sequence 2D, which would be one that is not adorned with a parentheses.
Scalar value would be.
A scalar value, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, so Anne, I agree with you on the requirement for the parentheses. That looks good. Now, getting back then to the second example, or the example under question two. Number one, can anybody think of a case where something like this would be required? You know, I was trying to come up with...
Oh.
Was that a no?
I can't think of any case where something like this would be required.
Yeah, I mean, I was really stretching, trying to figure out, you know, maybe you've got an instrument temperature readout where in some reads you've got two values, in other reads you've got three values, but
you could have an intensity and a reticle point, for example.
Okay, actually, Ron surprised me and said, was this in the MRO thing that you originally had the keyword that was pointing to it?
This was in that table keyword.
You're kidding.
Yes.
No,
you're not. And what? I couldn't hear Ron.
Okay, hang on a minute. Let me look up the original file that Ron sent this to me in, and I can, where the heck did I put that? Oh.
I mean, what you're representing here is a sparse matrix, really.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're trying to allow the potential for a sparse matrix.
I hear where you're going on that, Todd, and what I would argue is that if it's a sparse matrix, then you should see the sparseness. You should see the zero there or something. I'm really having trouble with this. Now that we agree that it has to be a singleton set, that whether a singleton set makes any sense, or a, say a combination of singleton sets and paired sets. I'm sorry. Sets with a singleton and a set with two values.
Okay.
Makes no sense.
That doesn't make sense.
This is an MRO local data dictionary keyword that has this value. Look up conversion table. Is there anybody online who can speak to that?
Well, I'm trying to, but I don't have that definition in front of me.
Is the dataset ID have anything to do with the keyword, Ron, in your example or not? Yeah. Your snippet of a label here that you were using for your test case, is that the correct dataset ID so we can at least figure out which dataset it's coming from?
Is this PRISM?
Pardon me?
sounds like a CRISM keyword.
CRISM, okay.
I'm not sure because I can't get to the place where I can look this up.
Okay, but at least some data provider in their mind had a use for this thing.
All right, well, it's, I think it's CRISM, and there's a lookup table, and it probably has these kinds of sequences within sequences. But
I believe there's also one for high-rise, Elizabeth.
Okay.
My interpretation of what they're trying to do...
Just because we can't imagine a use for this doesn't mean we shouldn't allow it.
She just basically said just because we can't imagine a case doesn't mean the data providers can't come up with something legitimate. I'm paraphrasing, but yeah.
So my interpretation of what they were doing is these are each single... It's a one-dimensional array where every other value is a two-dimensional array.
Right.
So that's why I don't think you want to put parens around the single dimension.
But N is correct. Notation requires it.
Right, that's okay. But you have to fix the DNF to permit it.
Somewhere in here it says two dimensions can be considered one dimension, and I can't find that.
That doesn't sound familiar to me.
Elizabeth, unfortunately, the GEO folks have to leave now.
I'm sorry, you guys have to leave at GEO?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I would appreciate it if you guys could review the keyword approval process separately and send me some notes on that.
I have two comments I'll give you about that now.
Okay, go ahead.
One is that we would like to be able to use either method, either the online web form or sending a template, because we have reasons we'd like to do it both ways.
Okay, the templates can be submitted via the form. Are you aware of that?
Well, we still would like to kind of email them because we might have a whole bunch and it would be tedious to enter one at a time.
Okay. My response to that would be it is our intention to make that form bulkable in some way. I haven't figured out quite how I'm going to do it yet, but we do want to allow the bulk case.
Right.
I still want to go through the online system because that way they get fed into a database. And what we're trying to do here is reduce the workload on the data engineers so we can make this process more efficient and not have you guys waiting around for months for your keywords.
Okay, if that's possible, then that would remove that objection. The second one is regarding approval, is that we think there should be one voice per node. That is, the nodes should not quarrel among themselves online, but should take that discussion offline and then appear to the group with one voice. And that, yes, there should be at least one person from each node required to review.
Okay, so your opinion is no node is allowed to opt out, and basically the keyword list gets restricted to one voice per node, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
All right.
So if this present discussion involves an MRO PRISM label, I'd like somebody to email it to me with the results of the discussion. So I know what's
okay. We'll definitely do that.
All right. We'll talk to you all later.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Where were we?
I think the goal is to try and put more rigor into defining steps and sequences. But even more importantly, the goal I'd like just to see is that we scale back the use of steps and sequences so that one is simply an ordered set and one is not an ordered set. And
isn't that what they are?
Well, unfortunately, there's all this confusion, including now at least we've cleared up the
code. Right in the standards, if one is an ordered set and one is not.
Yes, I think what Ron is arguing against is allowing the multidimensionality. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another consideration is there isn't actually anything in the BNF that prevents you having an ordered sequence of inhomogeneous values. So your ordered sequence might be A, 1, blue, 4 times 10 to the 32nd.
Well, I think that my understanding is from the text that is explicitly allowed, that you are allowed to have heterogeneous sets. Thus, a sequence may represent a heterogeneous record. That's right in the text.
So read 12.5.5. That's the one that's got. We go back to
5.5. Okay, 12.5.5. A sequence represents an ordered set of values. It can be used to represent arrays or other kinds of ordered data.
Find the sentence that says a two-dimensional sequence is a one-dimensional.
I don't think it's in there, Ron.
Each member of a two-dimensional sequence is a one-dimensional sequence.
Yeah.
That's on page 12.22 at the top.
Okay. Again, which... with Anne's point about putting the parentheses around the 99 and 88.
Great.
But each one of those value, each member of the two-dimensional sequence is a one-dimensional sequence.
Mm-hmm. That's what would be required right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, but again, each one-dimensional sequence does not have to be similar to any other one-dimensional sequence within the two-dimensional sequence.
So what this is arguing is that...
I don't know.
With the addition of the parentheses, this example is in fact valid.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anybody object strongly to us permitting that?
Me. Mm-hmm. Well, if it was just 99, 98, 97, you wouldn't put parentheses around each value.
That's because then it would be a one-dimensional array.
It's a
two-dimensional, where each member is a one-dimensional sequence.
I don't read this the same way you guys are, I guess. I'm saying if it was a one-dimensional array, you wouldn't put parens around each one. I still see this as a single-dimensional array, but every other value is...
Okay, the very fact that...
That's not allowed, Ron.
Yeah, you can see it logically any way you like. In point of fact, syntactically, it's just not valid, and it looks like a two-dimensional sequence.
Yeah, the fact that the minute you've got a single member that has multiple, that has another dimension, you've gone beyond a single dimension, so you are now dealing with a two-dimensional array. And that means that now each member is considered a one-dimensional array and therefore requires the parentheses.
That's interesting.
I mean, it's sort of like, yeah, if that's your one-dimensional array, the minute you've got that, you've got another dimension.
Okay, then is this compliant or non-compliant if you put parens around it?
I think the
consensus is it is.
That it is compliant.
Right, yeah.
And put an example in there like that. And
that's my third point. Okay, are we settled then on two? Include the parentheses and it becomes valid?
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, I guess I still have a problem with...
The
1D sequences themselves. We're saying they can be totally... they can have differing number of elements.
Yeah.
Any variation of on theme.
Yep.
Yeah.
Currently, and the question is, should we allow that?
No,
I don't think you can stop it at this point.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm saying is that we've got an ordered one here where we got one value, two values, one value, two.
Hold on, Steve. We're saying that ODL will allow it.
Okay. So my question is, and I thought that was one of the earlier questions, so basically raising it again, was do we want to allow a user to provide this? Does it make sense?
No. When you say heterogeneous, though, are you talking in this case about the dimensionality, or are you talking about the type of value?
Number of elements. In other words, the way it's read now, you could have a one-element array and two elements.
Any member has more than one value.
Yeah.
You're no longer talking about a one-dimensional sequence. That's the point.
I'm talking about the one-dimensional sequence. Okay, so...
Strictly speaking, a one-dimensional sequence cannot have members with more than one value.
Must be scalars. One-dimensional sequence must contain only scalars.
Yeah. What you are looking at is a two-dimensional sequence, though.
Okay, wait a minute. Then I'm using the wrong term here. I've got a one-dimensional sequence, and I've got one scalar.
Mm-hmm.
The first one-dimensional sequence has got one scalar. The second...
The problem is your first statement was an error. You do not have a one-dimensional sequence. You have a two-dimensional sequence.
Okay, I've got a two-dimensional sequence. Included within that are one-dimensional sequences.
That's correct.
Okay, within the first one-dimensional sequence, in that two-dimensional sequence, it's got one scalar.
Correct.
The next one-dimensional sequence could have two scalars.
And that still makes it a one-dimensional sequence.
One-dimensional sequence could have three scalars.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
The next one-dimensional sequence could have four scalars.
You got it.
There's no control over the number of scalars within a one-dimensional sequence.
That's currently the way it's
true.
And I'm questioning whether or not we want to have any type of recommendation to keep people from doing that.
Well, I would never allow a user to create a keyword of that nature, but...
Okay, then
saying that ODL would allow it if, for some reason, it made sense. I can't think of a reason why it would make sense, but if for some reason it ever did, ODL would allow it.
Okay, given Steve's question, and I think this Lyle sort of agrees with what you just said, should we permit this within our PDF standards?
And it goes back to what Todd said. It seems like when they're not consistent, when the one-dimensional sequences are not consistent, it seems to be implying some type of sparse... when you got multiple one-dimensional sequences within two-dimensional sequences, and they all don't have the same number of scalars, it seems to imply this is a sparse matrix. Now, the question is, do we allow sparse... Is this, in a sense, a shorthand for sparse matrices, or does it imply something more wild? That's the question.
I don't think it implies sparse matrices necessarily, and I can think of a situation where someone might actually want to use this. Well, this is going back a bit. In IUE spectra, there used to be reticle points of attachment of something. Anyway, it was important to know where they were when you were running your reduction software. They weren't always necessarily on the same pixel. Well, you could use a structure like the example in 2 plus syntax changes to say reticle point 1 is located at these pixel coordinates. Reticle point 2 is located at these pixel coordinates, and so on and so forth. So the first value would be the identification of the reticle point, and the second value would, in fact, be the pixel coordinates within the image where you will find that particular reticle point. And they each had their own properties, so they were distinguished. It's a very weird situation. I can't think why the hell you would put it that way. I would probably put the information someplace else. But there is at least one logical situation where a structure like this that has sequences, 1D sequences alternating one scalar and two scalars would actually make sense.
Right, but I think Steve's point was, in your example, those are homogeneous. It's a homogeneous pattern. Right.
Yes,
it's a single value and then a pixel location, which is going to be uniform.
That's right. The single value will be a name. The pixel location will be integer.
But if you had an example where you had the first thing was maybe a bin name, and then there were the the bin windows, and that the window number of windows in the sampling was variable depending on your range that you're currently sampling on or the mode.
Yeah.
Then that second that alternate set would have a variable number of values in it, so therefore it's more like a sparse matrix, but it's, because each one isn't homogeneous in number of members. But that, I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be allowed. I mean, if someone has a use for it, and syntactically we can support it, I don't see why it shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
Well, that's my question. I want to raise it again, make sure everybody agrees that that's the issue there, that we're talking. The issue is basically, I think, whether you've got homogeneous matrices or not. The answer is we don't. We allow any type of matrices.
Well, we always have. If you're changing it, then you're introducing a change to standards, which means we have to go look back through all the damn data sets and see how many of them become invalid.
Well, you're right.
Right, because then it would be a further constraint than a relaxation of restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And let me put it this way. Who out there is advocating that we disallow heterogeneous numbers of scalars within the one-dimensional sequences within a two-dimensional sequence? That was way too complicated. Anyone else? Okay, number one, do people understand what the heck I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't think it's worth the effort to write it in.
Okay.
It really isn't. How many two-dimensional sequences are we going to come across to begin with?
Well, we found that's the whole problem is when this was introduced through MRO, there was this huge flurry because all the tools started throwing up, and then even the three amongst us couldn't decide if this was
valid
or not. And the goal, frankly, is to get the tools to be much more rigorous in their validation. So we're going to need to address this.
Well, okay, I think, though, as long as we are sticking to two dimensions, you can have an infinite number of scalars within that second dimension, but you can't have more than the two dimensions. And that should be something that we can validate.
Well, I understood your point. I didn't understand.
What?
Okay.
Can't. Why?
I guess what I'm saying, as long as, okay, we've got a two-dimensional array, each member of that is itself a one-dimensional array, meaning it can have from 1 to infinity values.
Right.
We do not require that each member of the two-dimensional array contain the same number of values.
Right.
I think I lost you. So you're constrained to two dimensions, period.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're there. Can I say that?
Okay. Each member of that two-dimensional array is a one-dimensional array. Okay.
That is represented in the syntax. Yeah.
Right. A one-dimensional array can have from 1 to n values. Right. But that's it. That's the grand total of the structure we've provided. That is simple enough we can validate.
You don't think that?
I don't think that's valid because I think that's three-dimensional. dimensional.
Here comes Steve. So what?
Okay, Steve, you've got a one. Okay, here's
that's
one dimension.
That's three dimensional.
Yeah, that's three dimensional. Yeah.
So if they put that into MERV, then it's in that one.
Okay. Are we all on the same page?
Then write that one in as not.
Okay, I can do that. I would be happy to provide this as not valid, as an example.
We need just as many examples of what they can't do.
Okay, does everyone think we're on the same page?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take a crack then in the SDR of coming up with a slight rewording that should hopefully clarify this issue, and I will make sure that this is listed as one of the valid examples. And then I will also put some invalid examples as well to help folks distinguish what the heck we don't allow. All right, number three. Okay, this gets into providing more examples. One of the things I wanted to do was, again, to put, yeah, exactly, a two-dimensional sequence. Put a we could put in a crazy example like the one that Ron's come up with, or excuse me, MRO came up with. I shouldn't blame Ron. And then put in an example that contains heterogeneous elements. Because I think our current example simply doesn't provide enough help for users to figure out what they are permitted to do. Does that sound fair to folks?
Yeah.
Any more suggestions on examples we should or shouldn't put in there? Excuse me, valid or invalid examples we should include to guide users on this? Okay, if you come up with anything after the telecon, feel free to send it my way.
I think I have an example of a somewhat heterogeneous sequence.
That would be great. If you could send that to me, I'd really appreciate it. Okay, now if we move on to 12.5.6.1, and this is sets. Sets are a lot more restricted than sequences are. And the first question that came up, and I forget who raised this, it might have been Betty, I don't know, is why do we not permit floats in sets?
Worse than that, why don't we allow character strings in sets?
Yeah. Should we loosen up these restrictions? Because this seems pretty arbitrary to me.
It does. I wonder what the rationale was. Steve, do you remember?
I'm kind of confused myself. I don't know why we don't allow them. The only thing we shouldn't allow is text strings, right?
Why?
Shouldn't?
Are we going to have, well, I'm sorry, what's the example? Were you, multiple descriptions?
Well, let's think. A set. We specifically have an ordered set.
And this is unordered.
Unordered.
No, sets are ordered.
Yeah.
Well,
I think my point was that we should allow probably everything but text strings, and if somebody can tell me there's a case for text strings, then why not allow it too?
The only crazy.
Yeah, I see what you mean by text strings, though.
Well, okay, let me throw out a stupid example. Let's say mission alias name, and I don't know whether we ever got that one in there or not, but let's say you've got three different names for the Mars Pathfinder rover, and you want to list them not simply an unordered list, but you actually want to supply the list in terms of order of preference, that you should use the official name first, and then you put in the other two names after that. Those would be a text string.
Yeah, but now you're talking about a sequence, and you can do anything you want in a sequence.
But what Steve means by text string is essentially a description field.
You're right.
Where I'm thinking character string would be
right.
Yeah, mine would still be a symbolic value.
Yeah, why do you want to prohibit blanks?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
What it comes down to, that basically the big divider between text strings and symbol values is blanks. Why don't you want to allow blanks in set members? Because I can imagine a set providing short titles, maybe three letters a blank and four letters for something.
Let me ask it this way, Steve. Other than the fact that we can't think of a good reason for people to do it, is there any technical reason not to permit it?
Okay.
Because in practice, is there really that much difference between a sequence and a set?
I can't come up with one.
Except
the only
one in which the order is important, but we always maintain order, at least we do, when we parse sets as well. I mean, they get parsed in the order that they appear.
Well, that's the syntactical difference. A set is an ordered sequence of scalars.
Right.
And I'm sorry, a sequence is an ordered set of scalars.
Now, let me ask one, see if there's one little monkey wrench. Do we have to prohibit parentheses from within those text strings, or does it not matter since they're within quotes?
If they're inside quotes, it shouldn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, the parser should be able to figure that one out. But if you only allow symbol values, you're not allowed to have parentheses in them anyway.
Right.
I'm confused confused. What is the, what do sequences allow? Everything?
Sequences allow anything.
Anything.
Sequence may have any kind of scalar value for its members.
Right, anything defined as a scalar value, yeah.
Okay, I misunderstood that. If it allows anything, then I agree, accessory law.
Okay.
I thought that would preclude it. I thought.
Okay, so we are now recommending the change then, the 12.5.6.1, just like sequences, a member of a set can be any kind of a scalar value.
Now note that where the 12, section 12.5.6.1 is PDS restrictions on sets. It is not an ODL restriction.
You are correct. So are we simply removing, no, it can't be set as a must.
I think we should just remove it.
We just strike that section.
Yeah. Yeah. Set as denoted by opening and closing, to do the set order in which the members appear. Whoa, I thought sets were specifically, oh, sets are unordered. I'm the one who screwed up. Sequences are ordered, sets
right,
are not.
Right.
Forgive me. Okay. Yeah. All right. I've been talking backwards here. Okay, so basically we're striking 12.5.6.1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Okay, and my last question on this was, discuss whether or not to permit two-dimensional sets. Yeah, basically, is this another area where we should make sets just like sequences?
I don't think you can because sets are not ordered.
Good point.
That's right.
And
that's sort of,
yeah, having dimensions implies some sort of ordering.
Very good point. Very good point. Okay, so we retain the restriction on just one dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Is that stated anywhere explicitly?
What?
It is in a syntax specification.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It basically comes out in the syntax. Okay.
But not in words.
Do we need more examples? Okay, here's the other question. Can the members of a set be heterogeneous?
I'm confused. What's the argument for sets within sets, not allowing them?
Because the set is not ordered, it doesn't make sense to try to imply dimensions, which would imply an order.
It's a structure. It basically becomes a structure, and you need some ordering for a structure.
Okay, you're saying it retains the ordering. Okay, I get it.
Well, you're allowed to.
Yeah,
order doesn't
you have to, I guess what you're saying. You always have to be able to index it to the right and get the
yeah,
same.
Yeah,
okay, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Now. I'm sorry. A little slow this morning.
Now, there's no text within 12.5.6 that implies whether or not the members of a set can be heterogeneous.
Yeah, actually there is. It just says for the ODL part, it says a set value is a collection of scalar values. Scalar values can have any type. And there's no...
Can
so
be
you're saying that the implication is that, like sequences, they may be heterogeneous?
Yes, for precisely the same reasons in the BNF, because
yes.
The scalar value type is not specified.
Okay, therefore, do I need more examples here as well? Would you guys recommend that I come up with a few more examples?
Not particularly.
No, I don't think they'd be illustrative, really.
Okay, so we'll just leave that one alone. Okay, so we're dropping 12.5.6.1, but we're leaving 12.5.6 unaltered, and we're making the other changes we talked about above to 12.5.5. Okay, sounds good. That gives me enough to go away and write an SDR now. Thank you. Okay, final issue is the keyword approval process. And I apologize, I did not have the time to get through everybody's email on this. I'm going to have to do that while we're talking. Okay, Todd, I believe you had the most concerns to start with.
What's new?
Your first concern had to do with we have a different process, or why are we coming up with a different queue from the standard change request queue. Is that fair game? Start there?
Yeah, first I like the keyword queue. I like the way it's done. I don't see why we can't make all our changes do something equivalent to that. That's basically my position.
Okay, I would say that there's a couple fundamental differences. One of the big things that I'm trying to target with, okay, philosophically the way I'm looking at these is keywords are a lot simpler to deal with than standards issues. I'm envisioning that standards issues need some pretty serious...
Yeah, actually after this discussion right now I understand why the standards change request is different than a keyword because of our previous discussion here.
Okay.
You know, we're going to change this section, this wording, that type of thing. So a little different than just saying, here's a keyword.
Okay.
So I think I understand the difference now.
Okay,
better.
Great, good. And then I'll just let everyone know, the main focus that I have in setting up the keyword queue separately is that I want to try and provide a unified mechanism that we're all where we're all on the same page, we're all using the same process, which is unlike the current situation. And where we're also trying to get this thing as efficient as possible so we can get the keywords in, get them approved, and get them back to the missions as soon as possible. And that's why I'm trying to separate this from the formal standards process.
Is the idea that the SCR queue will eventually be something like the online keyword queue process, you know, that we would post the SCR, there would be some sort of buttons to click to vote and do all that kind of thing? Without having a telecon at every instance?
Well, I've been moving a little bit in that direction, but to be honest, I don't think I have envisioned going the whole way. Because I think the main difference that I'm looking at is the keyword is more of a consent kind of thing, where, I don't know. Well, then, you know, okay, let's put it this way. Let's go through and talk about the keyword process. If folks are feeling like they want to move more towards an online process for voting on the SCRs, we can talk about that. I think there's still value in having the telecon, but I'm certainly willing to hear, you know, if you guys would all prefer to move towards more online discussions and online voting, we can do that.
Well, you talked at one point about simple changes to standards like correcting typos, fixing bad examples.
Right, right.
I presume that that's kind of at the end of this keyword thing, that you might broaden it.
And that's another issue, is do I simply tack that onto the keyword thing, or do I come up with a separate errata process? I don't know. I haven't gotten that all worked out yet. And again, I agree. Yes, I want to have a separate process for dealing with the really simple, stupid issues. Right now, I just decided to tackle the keywords and try and get that under some kind of control. Is that fair game for now? Is it okay to take that approach, and then we can talk later about working with the standards process to try and improve that?
It's fine with me.
Okay. Just to give you guys some background, again, we discussed this first about a year ago. Actually, it was a little over a year ago now. And the problem we've had at that time and since then is that we have different nodes submitting keywords in different, using different mechanisms. Some of the nodes are going through the formal standards process. Other nodes are working directly with their data engineers and submitting them through the data engineers without any outside kind of review or anything like that. And we just wanted to sort of, again, make sure that we're all working through the same process, that we have consistent rules for all the nodes, consistent mechanisms, et cetera. So that's primarily where this is coming from.
Is the second process giving other nodes a chance to comment? Because I don't remember seeing much on keywords of any kind in the last two or three years.
It has not been, no.
Okay.
And that's been one of the concerns we want to address.
Because I like this proposed method because there's transparency to it.
And again, that's been one of the goals, is to try and make sure that everybody's getting a chance to see what's going on and have an opportunity to comment on it. Okay. Okay, second issue that you brought up, Todd, had to deal with the existence of the keyword committee and asking what's the purpose of that when we have the entire community having an opportunity to look in on the process. That's an issue I'm willing to debate. My main argument in favor of the keyword committee would be that the specific focus there is particularly upon making sure that the syntax of the keyword is correct. I think more often when members of the community are reviewing keywords, the focus can be on, you know, what is the meaning of this keyword? Is it something that we really need? Is it something that, you know, we already have a similar keyword that's been used elsewhere, as opposed to focusing on, does the class word correctly match the standard value type, and does the standard value type match the minimum and maximum values provided, et cetera. So that would be my main focus in terms of having the keyword committee in the internal review process.
That's fine as long as the keyword committee isn't approving keywords without it ever being sort of publicly reviewed.
Okay.
For the transparency reasons.
Gotcha. Now, the one possible exception, and this is something I want to throw out there for debate, is the existence of local data dictionary keywords. When they are submitted, do they need to go through more than that syntactical internal validation? And I just want to, I don't have a strong opinion on this. I want to hear what you guys have to say. Should they also go through a community review, or is it just an issue of making sure that they're properly formed, well formed, and then basically saying, yeah, go ahead and throw it in your local data dictionary?
They get submitted?
Yes, they should be submitted because they have to. They still have to be able to be ingested into the data dictionary, even if they're only local in scope. They still need to be correctly formed, and we've been seeing keywords that are not correctly formed, and they can't be ingested. And then, what the heck do we do with them?
Okay. Well, I know I've asked this question before, but it's been at least a year. So, where is the documentation for the process of creating local data dictionary keywords?
It is in the standards reference in a non-logical spot, and every time this comes up, we have to go digging for it. Where did Betty say it was? 5.5, I think.
I don't know, but I can look at the table of contents. If that'll help.
Yeah, I think it is in Chapter 5.
Yeah, I think it's 5.5.
Data product labels?
I told you it was in a non-logical place, but it's in there.
Well, you're right.
Yeah, and it's a very short section, too.
Data identification elements, I'm not finding it. Can you give me... locally defined data elements. There it is, down at the bottom. Review and use. Okay.
Following reputation on the review, custodian of moon space.
Wow, the PSDD should not contain locally defined data elements.
Okay, this may be an issue that we need to get back to because we've got some very strong disagreements on that.
Yeah, I know, and part of that comes from technical points of view of not wanting to maintain more than one data dictionary, but, you know, for parsing purposes or whatever, but I really don't think locally defined data elements should be in what's called the PSDD.
Todd, just to clarify this discussion, do you agree that this is really a namespace issue, that PSDD is one set of elements and local data dictionaries are other sets of elements? And so I think we absolutely agree that the PSDD namespace is only the formal data dictionary.
Right.
But I think the issue is that we would take the position that those local keywords should still be included in the same database that includes the PSDD, and they should still conform to the same syntactical rules as the elements in the PSDD.
Those are the issues.
Well,
I think what another way of saying what Elizabeth is saying is there's one repository that exists where all keywords can be found.
Right, and I guess it's just
irregardless of the namespace.
Right, and I think where I kind of get caught up on is the terminology we use in that. There is a PS, like you said, namespaces, yet we use synonymously the PSDD to mean the container of all namespaces.
You know, and
it's just a terminology thing because we've evolved. And
yeah, and that may be partly a problem that I'm driving. I do use PSDD to refer to sort of the set of all namespaces, where I then refer to global versus local in terms of the scope of the keywords. And that may be different than what everybody else is using, and I need to get on the page that everyone else has.
I think we've always said there's the Planetary Science Data Dictionary, and some way this has evolved into a PSDD colon namespace. And maybe we need to differentiate between those two things.
Okay, so maybe one of the things we do need to do is just settle on
terminology.
And I think if we did that, and we would probably have less disagreement on things, because we sometimes may be talking about the same thing but using different words, and it causes misconception.
In other words, we're sometimes probably in vehement agreement and we don't know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it, yeah.
Yeah, we're in violent agreement or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right, okay, so this brings us back then to the issue of what kind of a review process should those local data dictionary keywords go through? Let me ask one clarification question first. Does everybody agree that local data dictionary keywords should meet the same syntactic validation requirements as global keywords?
Well, they have to be syntactically correct. I mean, they have to be fully specified, I would say.
Okay.
So I guess the answer is kind of yes.
Okay, any other comments?
Because they have to be ingestible.
Right. Okay, good. That's what I've been saying, and am I hearing any disagreement on that point? Okay. Then, given that, what kind of a review process should the local words go through?
Local review with a validation that they're fully specified.
Okay, and should the validation be carried on only at the node, or is it appropriate to take them through the internal review process here at the engineering node that I laid out in this keyword approval process?
I think if they're local, it's local business. It's local needs and local things they're addressing. I don't I don't think there should be any restraint on how they define things, as long as they don't conflict.
The biggest concern I've got with that, Todd, is the number of locally defined keywords that we've been seeing showing up that are not syntactically valid.
Yeah, I would vote for some engineering node review just for consistency across the whole system.
Do you really mean syntactically valid, or
yes.
Do you mean they're semantically invalid, that they're not using class words or they're not using class words correctly? You're not actually seeing keywords with mixed case and hyphens in them, are you?
Okay. Let me say up front, I am sometimes using syntax and semantics incorrectly. Let me put it this way. We are seeing things like incorrect class words. The MRO keyword we were just talking about is a classic example. There is no table class word.
Yeah.
So that never should have existed.
Right.
We're seeing keywords show up where, again, like I say, things like the class word is not matching with standard values. You may have a keyword that has a standard value type of character, and there's minimum and maximum values provided. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is not being caught in some cases at the discipline node.
Okay. Is this a? I mean, these. I've read the rules because I'm anal enough to worry about this crap. But they're subtle and not easy to apply. Is this the sort of thing that there ought to be perhaps an hour of in-service training for all the data node data engineers so that we're all on the same page?
I think that would be a fantastic idea. I think that that's something we should do. The other thing that we want to do in the future, and this is something we just haven't had time to put on the agenda yet, is coming up with an online tool for the creation of new keywords that basically forces good grammar, that will not permit you to put in, for example, minimum and maximum values if you've got a character standard type, standard value type. So that's the long-term goal, and the question is, in the near term, how do we prevent more garbage from getting into the dictionary?
Well, that's a good thing in terms of creation of a keyword, but there must be some sort of validation tool that should exist for keywords. I mean, if you're ingesting and they're getting kicked out because they're semantically incorrect or...
No. The problem is they're not getting kicked out in the ingestion process. There's nothing in the ingestion process that, for example, in the example I just gave, prohibits you from loading a minimum and maximum even though the standard value type is character. The database doesn't care that you're filling those fields in because it doesn't do a comparison between, you know, if this column contains this type, then this column shouldn't be populated. The database can't do that.
Right. So currently the only quality assurance
is human beings.
Is human review.
You got it.
I mean, part of this is the problem with class words is particularly acute because there's a default class word that doesn't actually have to be in the keyword. So, for example, the rules for the dictionary keyword formation say that if you come to the end of the keyword and you find something like table, well, then you assume that the actual class word is
value yes.
And it's just not stated. So that kind of makes the dictionary look like anything goes. You
right.
can't really sort on class words.
Right. And the other problem we've got is we don't even all agree on exactly what those class words mean. For example, my interpretation of value has always meant that it has to be numeric. Other people don't agree with that. So even there, it's something that we need to sit down and hammer out and make sure we're all on the same page. So yes, I think going through and reviewing those things is part of the data dictionary cleanup process that needs to happen, and then as you state, maybe doing some training. But then also we need, I still think an element of this whole thing is what kind of review process do we need? And I would argue that it doesn't hurt to have an internal review here at the engineering node of those local data dictionary keywords. I'm willing to hear arguments on that, yeah.
Could we maybe rephrase it, say it's a quality assurance.
Quality assurance review kind of thing or something?
Somebody's
or?
Checking, you know, for this level of adherence.
Any strong opinions on that one? Okay, that is something that I neglected to spell out. I was talking about local keywords at one point in this process, and then I forgot to mention them after that. So I'm going to have to go back and insert some text making it clear that the local data dictionary keywords will go through up through the internal review step. Is there a need for local keywords to go through an external review?
I would say no.
That's the opinion we had here. I'm willing to hear arguments on this.
Well, it's kind of what it says in the standards.
Okay.
That the responsible party for the local dictionary has absolute authority over element definitions.
Okay.
Of course, if a local keyword tries to migrate into the global, then
not
it has to be, then there's a review that
yeah,
takes place because they're changing namespace.
Yeah.
It's actually specifically prohibited. in the Chapter 5 rule. It says, promoting locally defined keywords to full PSDD standing is not permitted. So in other words, if you want to propose the same keyword for the PSDD, you start from scratch and submit it. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, now, I think we may have drifted, and Todd, I'm not sure if I ever answered your initial question here, which,
think you did.
Okay, the issue of the keyword committee, does it make sense to have that internal review in addition to the external review? Given that the main purpose of the internal review is the grammar kind of thing.
Well, I think if the only quality assurance we have is it's a person reviewing something, then we need some organization or some individual designated as someone to review things. So you probably need a keyword committee. I don't think they have – I wouldn't like the keyword committee for globally defined keywords to have approval authority.
No.
That's the part that I don't want.
And they absolutely do not. It cannot get to the approved status until it's gone through the external review.
Right. And that I'm fine.
Okay.
Couldn't we view the internal review as really engineering nodes review? And then exactly how you do it could be left up to the engineering node.
Yeah. This is an option that I brought up when talking about things with the data engineers about why can't we do this concurrently? And basically our review here, our vote, depends on, you know, having gone through that syntactic and semantic validation, whatever. They felt pretty strongly that they wanted to have a week in advance to try doing the test ingestion, to work out some, I guess the feeling was, let's say that a relatively inexperienced data provider came along and via their node submitted some pretty bad keywords. They wanted the opportunity to work with the node and iterate a few times on getting some of the very obvious mistakes cleared up without basically embarrassing the node or embarrassing the data provider before putting that thing out there for external review. I don't have strong feelings either way. I'm willing to hear, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I don't object to that. It's just that we've sort of formalized this process with a keyword committee, which as far as I can tell is engineering node. It would just seem to me simpler to say there's a box where engineering node does its stuff, and maybe some of that is done offline, some of it's done as formal process. I don't much care as long as engineering node does its job. And then we don't have to worry about whether there's a keyword committee or not. Engineering node just finds the right people and gets the job done.
Okay.
I agree with you.
What is the problem then with us, for the sake of the engineering node, laying out what our internal process is here in this document? Is that a problem?
If this document is for all of PDS, why do you want to put your internal EN processing in it? I wouldn't put internal SVN data handling in a PDS-wide document.
Okay.
We can say what you need to do.
Yeah, you can lay out the logic.
But how you do it, I don't care. You could bring in all former PDS managers and have them review keywords as long as the job gets done.
Serve them right, too.
Is this simply an issue of co-location of the document? Maybe this is an appendix or something?
I think the issue more is what they're arguing is that the first, basically most of the sections in under 3 should be collapsed into a single paragraph that describes what the engineering node does in the internal review, and then we pass it on.
Because if the engineering node decides to do it differently, you don't have to change this document.
Yeah. I think, in support of Elizabeth, that we're trying to be totally open about what's happening here. And so we're willing to take stuff out if you wish. But
you can close the door when you go to the bathroom.
Thank you.
No comment.
Sure.
We do have cameras, though.
Gosh. All right, so let's collapse detail on this. Okay.
I have to leave this telecon now. I'm up against another meeting I have to get to.
Okay, my apologies.
I trust you guys.
All right. Okay,
bye.
Thank you. All right, did we... Bird has a common use that should be added. Okay. All right. Todd's other question was, can we define consent? And this primarily had to do with the way in which, what we had initially meant when we came up with consent was If you have a problem, speak up. If not, stay silent, and we'll assume you have no problems with it. What that has evolved into is you do need to indicate that you've looked at it and that you either have no problems or you do have a problem with it. It's meant to be still a simpler type of vote than the votes that we go through on the SCRs, although I got to admit that the differences are disappearing rapidly.
Todd and I discussed this offline. I think he was okay with the result. But one way of sort of getting a record is to make a list of everything that you think is being approved by consent and then just have one vote on it. That way, presumably, everybody's seen the list, and you do get active votes in favor.
I guess the concern I've got with that is, given the way keywords flow in and out of here, you know, we could have 3 come in 1 week, 50 could come in the next week, 1 could come in the following week, none the following week. What is our consent calendar at any given time? You know, do we basically have a week's worth of issues always gets posted, or, you know, how do we handle that? And what if somebody has an objection to one of those 100 keywords that just came in from a Mars mission? How do we indicate that and allow the rest of the 99 to go forward?
Well, you raise the objection to the one, and the 99 go through.
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying is, in terms of a simple online mechanism for collecting that information, I guess I could come up with a chart that's got a list of, you know, checkboxes or something, where if you have an objection to a particular keyword, you just hit the checkbox. I'm just literally trying to envision the interface that we would use to make that work.
You may not want to design something today. It might be better to see how this works.
Okay. We can
these anomalous situations may not come up often enough that it's worth spending a lot of time designing a foolproof system to deal with them.
Okay.
I would be happy if I saw 100 keywords and I didn't like one of them, just sending you an email or posting something on the blog saying this keyword just doesn't work.
The biggest problem I've had with the blog, and that had been my initial inclination, was to do just that. But what I've been finding in the consent issues that we've had in the blog so far is that some people are entering comments that say, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we did X? And I'm left to make a decision, are they objecting? Do I need to do something, or are they okay with this? There's a sort of wishy-washy kinds of comments that are not clearly saying either, yes, this is okay, go ahead with it, or no, this is not okay. So it's leaving me ending up being sort of the arbiter on deciding, basically trying to read people's minds on whether or not this is okay to go ahead with, or we need to make some modifications. And that's why I would prefer the online interface that I've got, where you have to choose one of 2 radio buttons. Yes, go ahead with it. No, don't. And then, yes, provide all your comments that you want in the blog so we can discuss it.
Maybe there's some etiquette in the blog. Maybe each entry needs to have finalized. The final sentence in the blog in the entry is what you're proposing. Just an etiquette. Make the point at the end so that the list knows what's going on.
What are your reactions, folks?
Well, the simplest reaction to your situation is if there's any comment whatsoever, it's not a consent item anymore. You have a yes button or you have a comment button. That probably means not many things get through on consent, but that's the most conservative approach.
I'm finding it bizarre to hear anyone complaining about lack of structure or standardization in blog entry.
Well, okay, and this is probably my fault in trying to put more response, you know, more capability on the blog than I should have. Blogs are great for discussion. Maybe they're not good for consent kinds of things.
I'm not sure I would call what I see on most blogs discussion.
That aside, let me see if I can pull up a good example here.
Find one of mine.
Well, I was going to say, Susie had proposed that we increase the length of the source product ID keyword, and somebody suggested, well, if we're going to do this, we should increase the length of all product ID keywords. Okay, how do I take that? What am I supposed to do with that? I mean, nobody has volunteered to go through and make a proposal that we increase the length of all product ID keywords. They haven't really objected. subjected to the source product ID keyword, do I go ahead with it or do I not? And I don't think it's appropriate for me to be the one who's making a decision on whether or not that person means, no, I don't want it, or yes, I do.
I think that's a cautious no. You need to discuss whether other keywords need to be expanded. If nobody wants to volunteer, then that one goes on. But there are some consistency things that come up when somebody tries to change a single keyword.
Okay. Now, the big problem with taking this conservative approach is it's going to greatly increase the length of time required to get keywords through, and that's exactly what I'm trying to get away from. So I would like to hear the reactions from the other nodes on that.
I'm confused. Reactions on what?
On taking the most conservative approach on if anybody's got a comment at all, I take that as a no.
Well, then that would explain why keywords I submitted 2 years ago haven't been ingested yet, so we would have a standing explanation for that instead of having to come up with a new one each time.
You get the nail on the head. That's
yeah.
Actually the problem, yeah.
Well, it's nice to have a handy excuse.
Yeah, and from a practical perspective, I think what we're saying is it hasn't been working and we probably should not be considering it now.
Why not have stain, accept, reject, and a comment area?
In a certain sense, despite the fact that I'm annoyed about the subject of keywords for reasons that are completely unrelated to this at the moment, I still think there's some merit in Dick's suggestion that you just try something, because if you spend too much time trying to figure out all the possible variables or all the ways that you might want to do it, the problem rapidly becomes intractable.
Okay, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like I have tried via the standards change request queue. These, for example, Susie has submitted a series of keywords, I don't know, 5, 6, something like that, in the last few months. And almost without exception, people commented on them. But I think there was only one case where somebody clearly said, no, this is a problem that we need to stop and discuss.
Would it be easier to have the engineering node keyword person in charge, whatever you want to call that entity, if it's a committee or if it's a delegatee or something like that, look at the comments and say and make unilateral decisions on things that seem fairly straightforward. Like, for example, in the product ID case, say, yes, you know what, it's really logical. All the product IDs, it's almost like a class word. They really ought to have the same length. I'll just change the submission to save it.
Do you guys really want us doing that?
Who said I didn't want you doing that?
But let's use that as an example. In fact, I had to address the SCR very close to that a moment ago. The original request probably could have been dealt with in a matter of a week or so. The suggestion being made is, well, gee whiz, we should make this a blanket change across the system, and you got from a week to, 6 months or something like that.
Well, now, why is that? In this particular case, that change doesn't invalidate anything. It rationalizes the contents of the data dictionary, and it ought to make maintenance easier. So,
but the implementation is going to take a lot longer.
Why?
Well, if you're changing all IDs across...
No, all product IDs. That's 6 keywords, I think, in the list, isn't it? And most of them aren't key fields in any of your database tables. I would be surprised if they were. And if you make them longer, you're not going to invalidate anything that's already there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree. The comment went off subject. They applied that this is related to some other area, and they're complicating the issue. And in some cases, in one case that I've got now on my desk, is it's a wholesale change being requested to the data dictionary.
Is that the one you just submitted about change all IDs and names?
All IDs now should be standardized to 40 characters. We don't know what that is yet. But where it was a single keyword in the first place, we're now saying, okay, what's the length of all IDs in the data dictionary?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we've gone from something that could have been done, like I said, within a week, to something now it's going to take, building consensus across the nodes, and then a major remodification to the catalog, so on and so forth.
Yeah, but that's a different order of magnitude change.
That's
because
the point.
That involves lots and lots of keywords, not as in the case of the product ID keywords, which is a very limited subset,
okay,
where the impact is minimal. And my point is that if it's someone who knows something about keywords and implementations at the engineering node can make that decision, they can say, you know what, this is really a trivial generalization. Let's resubmit it with the generalization and see if that flies versus, you really can't generalize this. So this particular comment, we have to tell them either that means you reject it or we have to enter this as a separate issue.
Okay, and to be honest, I'm a little surprised here. hearing this, and the reason I have is that the impression I've been getting is that people have been upset in the past about changes that are being perceived to be made arbitrarily here at the engineering node. Mm-hmm. I think the past practice has been that when there is a slight change that should not have any impact on anything being required, somebody just goes ahead and makes the change in the database. And I've actually been trying to push us away from that, where every change has got to be approved.
Well,
am I pushing in the wrong direction?
I don't know, but the thing is that the changes that, I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo, that the changes that I've complained about are never slight, they're never trivial, they never have minimal impact. So there are things like new fields, new required fields showing up in catalog files, my favorite complaint, and I'm sure Steve is rolling his eyes right now.
You're right on.
Yeah, but that is not trivial. That is not something that should ever be done unilaterally. That affects the database at Central Node in addition to invalidating existing catalogs.
Okay, now the problem that I've got in response is that I can see cases where changes are believed here to have no impact, and lo and behold, we make the change, and suddenly we find out some node is upset because, in fact, it did have an unexpected impact on them.
And that's the point. It's a federation. Each node is far different than most people realize.
Yeah, that's true, but I would still think that a good data engineer with sufficient experience would catch 98 out of 100 of those cases.
We have people that get very upset at the node for something that we thought was totally insignificant, which did have some major impact. We just didn't know that how that impact would be, how big it would be.
Oh, boy, I don't know how to respond to this. I mean, I can definitely see that, you know, efficiency could be increased by our just making those decisions, but I am very concerned about how that opens us up to critiques for errors in judgment when we don't have a formal process that we've gone through.
See, the problem is if you require full consensus on every tiny change that has to be made, then you've automatically guaranteed that no significant changes will ever be made in anything like a timely manner. And frankly, then we don't really need engineers, we just need accountants.
Well, you see, I disagree. This is where I get back to what I frankly would like to do is to force the nodes to choose on individual keyword changes to say, basically do a thumb up or thumb down vote. And if you do the thumbs down, then great, go ahead and, you know, provide the comments and let's get in and discuss it. But I think that we can remove a lot of the noise by forcing that up or down vote.
So you just limit blog entries to 3 characters?
No. This would not be on the blog. The blog entry, you're allowed to say anything you want. The will be on each keyword page, and I provide an example. It's not actually working yet, but all the text is there. Where basically I have consent status. And there is a place where you indicate, there's a drop-down menu where you indicate your node, you then choose one of 2 radio buttons and hit submit, and it then tabulates the vote from each node.
Yeah.
And like I say, you can use the blog to do all the commenting you want.
Well, while everybody's doing that, your discussion is somewhat refreshing because of late the engineering node has been under such a microscope that we don't shut the door while we're doing our business because certain people will start yelling and screaming that we're doing it in privacy.
That's fine.
I have reviewed it. I have no objection. Abstain.
Well, what's an abstain? An abstain is basically, I have no objection.
Yeah.
It's equivalent. This is the thing. I've got to count every vote one way or another. So I'm basically saying up front, I'm going to force you to pick which of those 2 options I should use. And that way, it's not open to interpretation. It's not open to my interpretation as to what you actually meant.
Accept
or reject? I mean, I could make it that simple. I didn't want to imply...
Keep your text there. Just say accept.
Oh,
dash.
Colon or dash or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, what you're asking is that they accept what's been presented. I think a third option would be, I'd like to discuss this, which effectively becomes a reject, even though people might not like to say that.
Well, isn't that exactly equivalent to the second option I have? I mean, this is the thing. When a keyword gets rejected, that doesn't mean it stops it from getting implemented. What that means is it then raises the level of that discussion, possibly up to the standards change request queue, or that simply means that that person in the node, actually, I guess I described that in the further parts of the process. Once the rejection is received, it's up to the originating node and that person to try and work issues out. If they can't, then the issue has to get raised up to the level of a formal SDR. So one simple rejection does not kill the keyword automatically. It just means, let's talk about this further.
Yeah, I think people have to get used to saying reject when they mean, I'd like to talk about it.
Well, that's why I didn't actually use the word reject in my second option.
Okay. Well, I think we vehemently agree on what we're doing here.
Okay. Is this good enough to go ahead and try it for a while? I mean, are people comfortable with this, at least as sort of a let's give it a try kind of?
I wouldn't mind reworking the pros. I think the basic process is okay, but it seemed to me that 3.5 pages was a bit more than we needed.
Dick, I would be happy. Do you want to take a crack at that? I would be happy.
I can take a crack if I may have some time this weekend.
Okay. Weekend, that's not
Dick,
fair.
I have some use cases that need rewriting.
I did have a question. As far as the technical part,
yes.
What exactly do you need? I think we need that the keyword is formed according to Chapter 2 in the data dictionary, and we also need the template filled out.
Yes.
Is there anything else that's needed?
Good question.
I would like a statement to that effect up at the top, but it's kind of diffused through the whole process. And
is that going to the descriptors as well, or is it the descriptors in Chapter 3?
Yeah, it's just the descriptors of the password.
If they're all in the same chapter, then we're done. CSVD front.
Do you have a definition template limit to 30 characters?
For global keywords, for local ones, you've got a limit of the 61. Because we've got 30:30, yeah. I suppose I could have just looked at the content that
would have been
easy. Yeah, it's all in Chapter 2.
Okay. And then we need a rationale for having the keyword, but that's presumably up to the discipline node.
That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that. And the rationale is actually supplied in the online interface where you submit the keyword in the first place. I guess rationale and then if there's an urgent need to get this keyword approved like by Friday, you also need to supply that and the reason for the urgency.
Before we leave, can you guys hear an echo?
A small one.
We've had lots of complaints over the time where there's a large echo and that we need to do something about it.
As you get closer to the microphone, the echo goes away.
Oh, is that right?
It was pretty pronounced when Ann was talking, and actually I hear one now on myself, but most of the time it's not been bad.
Okay. I'll try and listen to the recording and see how bad it is on there. I don't know if that'll reflect what everybody else is hearing, but there's one final issue I wanted to bring up, clarification, and maybe I'm the only one that didn't know this, but I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And I wanted to explain what needs to happen after a keyword is approved in terms of the ingestion process. And basically, well, because that's where our major time delays are coming in. Okay. I just wanted to make it clear that once a keyword gets ingested into the database, and can you remind me what the initial database is that what's the name of the one that John runs the web interface off of? Okay, DB Online Dev. Once the keyword gets ingested into that online, into the database, it is available through the online web interface. That's the database, data dictionary download tool, I guess it's called. But the pdsdd.full file is not yet updated until there is a database build, when the information that's in that dev database gets transferred over to the ops database or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
DB Online. Thank you.
And that is, those database builds nominally happen roughly every 3 months. Special builds can be requested when there's urgent need on a more frequent basis, but they are fairly manual intensive, and therefore we can't just automatically do them every day or every week or whatever. So I just wanted to make it clear that there's a distinction between when a new keyword becomes available online versus when it's available in the pdfdd.full file that I guess are used for validation locally at the node. Is everybody clear on that? Was I the only one that didn't know it? Or?
You were the only one.
Okay.
So the online version is the one that we should refer to in case of conflict?
Yes, the latest and greatest is what's available online. That's correct.
And then the printed version is 3 or 4 years later.
I don't think there's been a printed version in 10 years.
Well, that's come up a couple of times recently, but we were told not to print them anymore.
Yeah.
If you guys, by management council or tech session, I don't remember which one, guys want one printed, all you have to do is say, okay, print one.
Well, what I basically have been told is that essentially the print version has gone away and that the information contained in the first two chapters of that document needs to be moved into the... either in the standards reference or it needs to become a standalone document.
Yeah, that's the problem. The first few chapters also, it's kind of nice to have that long list of standard values in the back, but that's online too. But 2002 is my latest full version.
I didn't realize the management council had said never print it again. I actually like having the PDF version.
I guess the problem would be...
Is there a printable PDF version?
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily want a hard copy, but I like having a PDF version on my computer rather than have to go online every time I want a keyword.
Yeah, same here.
Well, apparently somebody gave the management council a sharp axe, and they got rid of a number of useful things without asking anyone first.
Yeah, but I don't ever recall having seen this one. I didn't know this was gone.
Do we have a mechanism for creating that PDF version easily?
No.
No, there's not.
The process was a... complicated process in the first place.
I think I actually wrote a tool that'll create an ASCII listing from the pdfdd.full file. If anybody really wants it, I can ship it out to you. It's probably in Perl.
But that doesn't have the first few chapters in it.
That's true. That only takes care of the definitions and the standard values.
Yeah, no, actually my point, Anne, is that if I like it, probably other people do too, including members of the user and data supplier community. But I would like to know that we've got an official management council policy that says we don't make a hard copy. I don't think that's the case.
I think
brought it up before, and I don't think that it's ever been turned on.
I think management council said they didn't want it printed at some particular time in the past, but I think that was because there was a lot of transition. I don't think they turned it off. I think the idea was that we'd wait until things quieted down. I just don't remember what was behind all that.
Seems like this is actually a JPL level decision, wasn't it?
Oh gosh,
no, I don't think so. I remember an edict coming down saying we didn't want them, that there was a vote, and people said, "But I mean, it doesn't matter if you guys want them again. Send an email to Emily." And
well, but that's not a non-trivial task. I thought is what I'm hearing from you two, and so I don't know that we can just say we're going to do it automatically without.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think we necessarily need to have an actual printed version.
I hear that. What it sounds like you want is the PDF. But
we have a PDF that we can print ourselves if we feel like it.
Yeah, but that still sounds like it's going to require some effort here.
There's no process right now to create a PDF, so we'd have to
Yeah, we can't just push a button and make it happen.
Yeah, and actually, specifically, I would want the front section separate from the back section.
Okay.
With all the definitions in it, because in order to look up the class words, I don't want to have to download 10 gigabytes worth of definitions that I'm not interested in.
That may make it a lot simpler. We just simply put two documents.
Yeah.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, I guess the thing we can do, first thing we do is just find out what the impact would be, how hard it would be to do.
Make a PDF. Yeah.
Okay. Sawdite, folks. I think we've all got plenty of work to do. Anybody, any final comments on anything?
Yeah, you have to bear with me. And this is just a comment. I'm not trying to push the decision one way or the other, but something kept bothering me about number 5, discuss whether or not to permit two-dimensional sets. Finally, I realized what it is the word two-dimensional, and Ann was correct when he said if you consider dimensionality, two-dimensional sets don't make any sense. But I'm not sure if dimension makes sense with sets in the first place. Nested does. nested sets and allowing sets within sets does make sense, and I'm just saying that is there a need for that, and maybe that needs to be considered.
I can't think of a need for it.
It does require changing the actual syntax of ODL.
Yeah.
Now, what might make sense would be nesting sequences inside sets.
That's kind of where it's going. In other words, you're getting into...
I don't want that.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the other thing we can do is just put it on the table until some mission comes up with a crazy case where they decide it's needed.
Well, now here's the problem. If you change ODL syntax, we were always told you couldn't do that because other people use ODL.
I had always thought that was the case. I recently asked Steve to look into that for another reason, and it turns out I don't think there's anybody on the planet besides us using ODL, and we are now the official curators of it.
And we right now are changing the syntax for this validation, for the validation tool.
Are you really? How fun.
So if anybody has any requests, now's the time to get them in.
Yeah. Could we spell it XML?
I definitely there's people pushing in that direction, but I think that's not going to happen as long as we're in PDS3. But who knows what's on the table for the future.
Do you think ODL externally and...
Oh. Anyway. Okay. Any other comments? Is anybody still out there, or did they all get cut off?
We're here.
No, we're extended.
Here. We were waiting for the time when the recording would stop so we could give really frank comments.
All right, folks. I'm going to sign off now. Thank you all for your time.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.